Your world, your challenges, your faith. When faith within engages the world without, there's power. It's living life from the inside out.
Misuse of power in the church hurts. It hurts individuals, it hurts whole congregations, and it hurts the witness of God's people on earth. So how do we spot it early or prevent it from beginning? Well, welcome to Family Life's Inside Out, where we'll be talking about this today. I'm Martha Manikas Foster, and my guest is counselor, pastor, chaplain, and author Michael McKenzie. He's written the recent Christianity Today post titled, Abuse Keeps Flourishing in the Church, Here Are Four Reasons Why, and his brand new book by IVP is titled, Don't Blow Up Your Ministry. Welcome, Michael, to Inside Out.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's great to be here.
I am very interested in this topic. I mean, Michael, the list of prominent church leaders accused of abusing power and abusing people is long. It's much, much too long. And that list doesn't account for abusive leaders in our own congregations. If we're going to create a culture that discourages abuse, what do we need to avoid? And I know this is a big question for a short amount of time, but can you distill that for us? What do we need to avoid?
Yeah, I'll hit on a few values that have creeped into church culture from general culture that I think we need to avoid that play into this problem.
Okay.
And one is our idolization of the lone dog, the get-it-done leader. I was eating with some friends recently, and they're telling me about the new pastor at their large church, and they said, you know, he's great, but he's not the kind of person you want to have over to your house or to have dinner with. And I said, I asked them to clarify, and they explained, well, you know, he's a really dynamic speaker, but he's kind of rough in person and basically kind of a jerk. And unfortunately, that has become not a norm, but it's fairly prevalent. And related to this, this idolization of this lone dog, get-it-done leader is our idolization of power and on appreciation for the opposite, humility. And as another example, I was at a pastor conference, you know, so there's a group of pastors, and the main speaker, another pastor, was fairly angry, arrogant, judgmental, but at the same time, he was powerful, charismatic, forceful, intense language, and he repeatedly got rounds of applause for his speaking. But his tone presentation was very negative. But there was something magnetic about that to the audience. There was something magnetic about his power. You know, somebody was there that was meek and mild, humble, would not get the same, you know, kind of effect. And so, again, we as a culture are enamored, have been enamored with power, with charisma, not in kind of the biblical form of charisma, just a charismatic, intense personality. And I think that plays into, and then, you know, also that the expectations we can put on the leader to perform, and then they do try to jump through all these hoops to perform. And so then there's a lot of pressure on them at the same time. And so I think that can create this driven person who's gotten there because they get things done, and then they're driven by the expectations and pressure, and it just can create this toxic combination of things going on in that pastor's life that they can become abusive.
So as people in a congregation, some things that we should be looking at ourselves about is, do we set the stage where we are looking for someone that we can, I don't know, put on a pedestal and admire maybe a little bit too much? I mean, the very fact that you have these friends who wouldn't feel like inviting the pastor over for dinner because it wouldn't really be that much of a, you know, a communion of saints kind of thing, you know, that does say something. And we could be asking ourselves some of those questions as to what is it that we look for and what do we applaud, literally applaud, in a church leader. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, let me set the stage for anyone who's just joining us. If you are just joining us, you're listening to Inside Out on Family Life. I'm talking today with Michael McKenzie, author of the recent blog post, Abuse Keeps Flourishing in the Church, Here Are Four Reasons Why. Michael, what does a healthy church environment look like? In other words, if we eliminate some of the things that seem to encourage the kind of pastor that we're talking about that can abuse power, what can we nurture in congregational life that will help us prevent the church abuse that we have seen from happening in our churches?
You know, in some ways it's so simple, but yet so difficult, because we are hardwired for success, and and all of us want to be a part of something that's growing, succeeding, we're proud of. People are proud when their church is growing and want to share that with others, and whether that's numbers or new building or new programs or whatever. And so we can set that stage, unfortunately, to not live as much in maybe what we would call normal relational life, and you know, a term you hit on, congregational life. What can we nurture? And I think it comes back to a focus on truly living life together in those normal ways, eating together, communing together, serving together on committees and teams and all those things, where, you know, there's a higher level of expectation for relational maturity when we're truly doing life together. If you're a friend with someone and you say something that hurts their feelings, typically we both experience that break in the relationship and we resolve it. We move forward in resolving it, and it stretches both of us, the one who offended and the one who was offended. And in the example of this pastor, you know, that wouldn't want to have him over for dinner kind of thing, there is no relational expectation on him, you know, and that's strange to me that we've gotten away from that. But it's like, you know, he's a jerk, but he gets the job done. It's basically what they were saying, but he gets the job done. And so to come back to a simpler way of doing life and community together, I think raises the bar relationally and emotionally. Whereas if we focus on someone who gets it done, we lower the bar relationally and emotionally. And that's so interesting, you know, again, working with Christian leaders who, you know, our goal should be Christ-likeness, should be living well in community, loving well, yet we can set up our pastor even for that not to be of value. So a sure way of trying to say what I'm saying is coming back to living life together in congregational life, not just 1 hour a week in our small group, but serving together, having lunch together, being together for family events or whatever it may be, tends to raise, again, the relational expectations that are on someone when you live in close community.
So that would work for, that would address one-on-one throughout the whole congregation. Are you saying that having the pastor in the mix of that, or the leadership in the mix on that, so that you do have life on life with the pastoral team as well?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think so. You know, I believe that that is key. That, you know, a lot of pastors unfortunately feel they can't have close relationships in their congregation because they may offend somebody. If I go to this person's house for dinner, so-and-so is going to get upset. So let me just keep it at arm's length with everybody. But unfortunately, that again is a breakdown in the relational expectation or the relational maturity that's expected from them, because they can stay in, at arm's length away as long as they get the job done, so to speak. And so I really think that congregations really embracing their pastor and vice versa in a relational community way, and that goes to leadership as well. There is wisdom in having a leader of the church, a person who, you know, makes some of the decisions, yet that shouldn't be in isolation that they do that. That should be with a team. That should be with a an elder board or whatever the setup of that denomination is. And so while there may be, you know, a leader who calls the shots in some areas, yet that doesn't mean they do it alone and in isolation, that they're not talking about this with others and sharing with others about that decision and getting input from others. So yeah, I do believe it is the pastor being in closer walk with those people that he or she is serving and in the church that they're in.
So your book, Don't Blow Up Your Ministry, has an incredible amount of information, and I see questions that a person who's leading a congregation would be able to ask him or herself. But for the purposes of us having this brief conversation, what kind of questions would you encourage pastors to ask themselves to help them avoid the issues that can lead to abuses of power?
Yeah, you know, there's several questions that come to my mind in that. And one, is my goal to get ministry done, or is it to be more like Christ? And we can blame those who put the pressure on us, but yet we also do it to ourselves. And so a pastor, you know, can say, well, everybody expects me to get the job done. Well, yes, but what is your higher calling? And that is to serve God ultimately and to be like Christ, you know, as a follower of Christ. Mm-hmm. Others are what are the values that guide my interaction with others? Are they built upon efficiency, perceived effectiveness, or the fruit of the Spirit? What's really guiding my interaction with this person in this meeting? Is it to get the job done? Is it to get them to do what I need them to do so we get ministry done? Or is it based on loving them, valuing them, respecting them?
Almost like a business model over what I would say a ministry model. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Then I would say, and of course, and as a counselor, I'm going to say something to this effect in my book that deals with this. But what's your own personal brokenness that plays into how I do ministry? We all as leaders like to think that we do everything out of faith and logic. And we sometimes don't realize how much our brokenness plays into. And what I mean by that is not necessarily sinfulness, but that plays into too, pride, selfishness, those kind of things. But our brokenness, for example, you know, at Marble Retreat, we've had many pastors confess, three in one of our counseling tenses, that they had been victims of fairly significant sexual abuse. Yet they did not think that played into how they lived life and how they led and how they did ministry. But it was clear that it did. And part of their time there was connecting the dots of how that played into boundaries, how it played into healthy attachment and intimacy with others, and all kinds of feelings of shame if they failed, and all those kinds of things played into somewhat to their own personal brokenness. And so I would say a pastor needs to ask themselves, how does my personal brokenness play into how I do ministry? What is the negative effects of that and how I live and lead? What is my personal brokenness? You know, is a good question. Mm-hmm. And what do I need to do to fix it? Because I, you know, again, being a counselor, I see it all over where a pastor is leading somewhat out of their brokenness, but don't realize how powerfully that is at play and what they're doing.
And it's not that their brokenness can't be part of ministry, but if they're not aware of what that is, that's the danger?
Yes. Great clarification. It actually can be a beautiful and powerful part of their ministry if they're aware of what it is. And that's part of my book, is giving hope that your brokenness is not something to be avoided with fear, feeling, oh no, if people know I have weakness, it's going to ruin my ministry. It's actually the opposite. God is waiting to do something through that brokenness. And, you know, we've worked with so many pastors who have realized what their brokenness was, to realize what God was doing through it, and then have gone back and incorporated that into their ministry. And overall, it's been a resounding, just healing experience and a powerful experience for the whole church. And so it was the opposite of what they anticipated, that if they know out there that I struggle with depression, insecurity, you name it, they're going to judge me and not see me as a fit leader or a strong leader. When actually the opposite ended up happening, that people were ministered to in a deeper, more profound way through that open vulnerability of the leader about their own brokenness. Now, wisdom always has to be used in what you share and all that. Yet at the same time, you're right, it's not so much about privately realizing your brokenness and then dealing with it and then hiding it. It actually can be an open door to helping others and ministering to others.
Thank you so much for your wisdom and for sharing with us some of what is in both your article and in your book. So thank you so much for being with me here on Inside Out.
Thank you very much, Martha. Take care.
My guest has been counselor, pastor, chaplain, and author Michael McKenzie. He serves as the executive director of Marble Retreat, which ministers to pastors and ministry leaders in crisis. You'll find links to his new book and the blog post that inspired this conversation by going to familylife.org and looking for this Inside Out story under the News tab. I'm Martha Menikas Foster, Inside Out on Family Life.